Today I'm joined by Stuart Howe, an activist with We Are Change Los Angeles. Stuart Howe, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
My pleasure, James. Thanks for asking me.
Yes, Stuart, can you start by telling us a little bit about your background and how you came to be involved with We Are Change?
Well, I kind of came to the party late, to the 9/11 Truth Party. I bought the official story and was angered by, this attack on our country by these warlike people from another land, and I bought it, I bought the lies about, Muslim extremists ruling the roost, so to speak, and although certainly there are extremists in most cultures and religions, I hadn't had enough exposure directly to Muslims at the time to not believe the hype, and I bought into it, and then things started to not add up. The coincidences started to outweigh the lies, and putting it into context of other lies and a general tone from the government, I started to question and I started to look into things, and things just started unraveling in my mind very quickly.
Was there any particular piece of information that that helped you push you over that edge?
I think, and it's hard for me to put it in chronological order, but the things that were the foundational turning point items were things like the hole in the outer wall of the Pentagon that was photographed before the facade fell, the size of the hole, the general common sense physics of how the buildings fell once I re-looked at them and realized that, hey, if there was plane damage, even the 5 or 10 floors of a building that big, the lower floors wouldn't disintegrate the way that they did. The buildings wouldn't fall. An analogy would be if you chop at a tree 3/4 of the way up, the tree topples over. It breaks and it falls. It doesn't disintegrate straight down into a pile of toothpicks and dust. And that. And I started learning a bit about that there was insider trading on the airline stocks. I've been a bit familiar with put options, and that was just huge. And, that opened a can of worms, and that sort of got me really looking objectively and open-mindedly at a lot of the other things, and which, I took with a grain of salt because there's a lot of disinfo, but when I started researching it, and I got a bit obsessive about it, and I saw that there was confirmation of a lot of the information that there were tangents that were obviously, false tangents to lead people away from the truth, space beams, wacky, ridiculous stuff. But the more that I saw that they were trying to distract people away from the truth, the more I realized that there really was a large conspiracy. And I started seeing, evidence of that all over the place. The PNAC documents, when I read those, it was chilling. And then learning about the agenda behind the neoconservatives and all of the other factions that align with them, and the agendas of the CFR, the Trilateral Commission, more recently the Bilderberg Group, things that were generally considered, campfire spook stories several years ago, and those things don't exist. Well, you can access their white papers, and to see that the media was portraying that as ridiculous mumbo jumbo, even though it was obviously a reality, although the details are kind of shrouded in mystery. The Freedom of Information Act documents that came out after the SPP meeting in Banff, Canada, where they actually stated that their priority was to proceed with stealth, then I felt like I was being consciously duped on a level that I hadn't really felt about JFK or Vietnam or any of the other big hoaxes, the Panama situation. It started to become a priority, and I saw the ramifications of the proceeding of their agenda, and I really felt the need to do a lot more and align my, my daily living and the things that were important to me with getting the truth out.
So let's talk about that process of transformation for you. How did it become a quest for, how did it change from a quest for information to an active participation in confronting or taking an active part in talking to these people who are responsible for some of those documents that you were talking about?
Well, you know, the more I learned, of course, the more I learned that there were a lot of people learning what I was learning, and the more I kind of got involved with going to sites like Truth Action, the various Alex Jones sites, all of the amazing places where you can go and access, you know, credible, you know, for the most part, very, very credible, well-vetted, cross-checked and referenced information, I started to, you know, come across hyperlinks to other groups, and I found a group that was doing Action every 11th of the month and even more than that, and I ended up at an Action on 3rd Street Promenade, and it was in Santa Monica. It was an Earth Day event. They had booths set up for all kinds of, you know, progressive, green-type deals, and one of them was 9/11 Truth LA. That was before we had formed We Are Change LA, and I went, and I just was very impressed. The people were incredible. These people were open-minded, honest, you know, striving to be outside of the box, connect the dots, and walk the walk. You know, I learned at some point, or had it explained to me, it made sense that the process of changing and living a different, in a different manner, takes the form of, you know, feel the feeling, think the thought, talk the talk, and walk the walk. And I was in that process. I was feeling uncomfortable about the way things were going in the world in general for a long time. Had been sort of gone through anomalies and, you know, deeper, more complex things in life, books like the Tao of Physics, things about the Great Pyramids, things, you know, mysteries of the world, things that were, you know, Bigfoot or space beams or, you know, that sort of thing. But, you know, really, just things that weren't talked about and pushed away. So I started learning, and I started thinking the thoughts and learning the, you know, the reality of what was going on, or at least what I'm is coming into view as a reality, puzzle pieces are fitting together, and then I was compelled to move towards talking the talk and talking with people in my daily life, talking to people, going to seminars, conventions, whatnot, crop circles, this and that, and then 9/11, in, you know, groups that were getting together and actually doing things, and then I started walking the walk and actually showing up, and it was so empowering. When I did, showed up at Earth Day and met a bunch of great people and, you know, got to actually talk to citizens and, you know, fellow truthers and, you know, network. And the synergies is amazing. It's an amazing group of people.
So let's talk about that group of people. In your own words, could you tell us a little bit about We Are Change Los Angeles and some of the actions that you guys have performed?
Yeah, absolutely, James. Well, we came together as a result of not being happy with some of the other groups that we were part of, and there was kind of no focus. There was no real. We didn't really like the way it was going, and so we, I guess it was Bruno, actually contacted Katie and said, "Hey, I want to get another little group together that doesn't have a, you know, big problem with agendas and a bunch of, you know, people wanting to go in different directions and." So we got about 9 people together that Katie and Bruno and a couple other people thought would be on the same page, and we got together at a coffee shop. We talked about what was going on. We laughed a lot. We shared a bunch of things. You know, have you seen this video? I'll send you a link to that. Here's some information on this. And we came up with, you know, just in the spirit of good-natured fun with all the whole serious situation, that the Bill Maher program at the time, he was really attacking the truth movement, and we thought, you know, we were kind of offended by it, and thought, you know, let's come back at the guy, let's do a video. Some of the people in our group had video experience, editing, you know, they had camera setups and whatnot, and I had worked for a time in television commercials, and so I had seen, although I was never responsible for storyboards and the more important tasks, I was a camera assistant for a while. I knew how all that stuff worked, so I did up some storyboards, and we kind of all synergized. We all came up with ideas to do a new rules back at Bill Maher in regards to his attack on the truth and the truth movement. He was characterizing everybody in the movement as crazy, wackos, you know, that sort of thing. So, you know, we came back at him with new rules and we wanted it to be playful. We wanted it not to be mean-spirited. We wanted to leave an open door at the end of it for him and anybody else that would care to think outside the box and look past the mainstream media propaganda to take the red pill and, you know, come on down the rabbit hole and join us.
Absolutely,
you know,
yeah.
Grudge. That would be crazy. We're not crazy, but, you know, to be closed-minded and to not really look into things, you know, not to look past what you're being lied to from people that have been lying to us for so long, that would be crazy.
Of course, and that video has become quite viral. Last time I checked, it has almost 300,000 views on YouTube. What do you think accounts for the popularity of that video? Why did it strike such a chord with the public?
Well, partly because Bill Maher's popular, and partly because I think the tone that we were searching for, and that I believe to a large degree we found, was, you know, it wasn't an angry, belligerent, activist sort of vibe. It was, hey, you know, we're kind of decent folks, and we've got a lot of joy in our lives, and we're not, you know, angry people by nature. And we didn't attack him on a level of being, you know, angry anarchist. We kind of took his style and turned it back on him in a playful manner. And I think people really responded to that. I think they saw that, you know, we weren't being hateful back in response to hate. We were trying to take a new approach and be somebody. Be a presence that somebody could relate to, somebody would want to be like, somebody would say, hey, these guys don't look that wacky, and they seem to have a point. It's logical that buildings don't fall into the path of most resistance. It's logical that this government is not so inept that they didn't fumble their way through 9/11. It sure looks like, because nobody was fired after 9/11 for being inept, maybe it was mission accomplished, and maybe it was... maybe it did go to plan, it's just that we weren't aware of the actual plan. So that's kind of what we did, and it seemed to, you're right, got a good response. In fact, it was on Google for quite a while before it was taken down, because apparently the guy that had posted it on Google had some fair use issues, not related to our video, but we got, I think, a few hundred thousand hits there, too. So we're really happy. That kind of put us on the map, and it was like, well, now what do we do to follow that?
Yeah, it was definitely a very effective way of getting the truth out. And of course, Bill Maher was also infiltrated by certain 9/11 truthers. I'm not sure if that was related to We Are Change or if that was a separate group.
Yeah, that was actually We Are Change LA. I actually went in, or attempted to go in, at a later time. We weren't going to use all of our resources at once. And I was part of the planning, on the planning committee, if you can call it that, at a coffee shop two nights before that, and there were members of other groups. It was primarily We Are Change LA. It was one of our first big actions, and although I was not in the first round, they did a great job. That was phenomenal, and that got a huge amount of attention. That was really rewarding to see, you know, all of the big commentators. You know, we had everybody coming after us and calling us crazy, and how dare they. It was on CNN, it was all over the place, and that really stirred things up. We got a lot of resistance. People said, oh, you know, you're making the truth movement look like a bunch of belligerent party crashers, and you know, I can sort of see that. In fact, I was a bit reluctant at first, because you sort of can't win heckling a comedian because they've got the microphone, right?
Mm.
But we also felt that it would be outweighed if we could just get a statement or two that made audio that they could hear about Building 7, controlled demolitions, any of it. We didn't mind looking bad. You know, we'll lean into the strike zone and take one for the team. And it worked out better than we could have imagined. One of our guys, Randy, threw up a bunch of deception dollars when they grabbed him. He was the first one that stood up, and that, you know, made a nice little show. And then Katie and Bruno and other people were able to stand up, and Katie got in some great comments about Building 7, and, you know, really showed Bill Maher, really outed him for the, you know, angry coward that he was. He was referring to Katie when he said, I'll come down there and kick your, you know, behind out of here, too. Okay, tough guy. Katie, this is a cute girl, you know, probably like 5'4", weighs all of, I don't know what, and, you know, so he's the tough guy. He's going to beat her up for heckling a comedian or asking a tough question. It was crazy. And then after the incident, which we had sort of orchestrated to be, you know, let a few people stand up and let the show go on, and then somebody else would interrupt again, and sort of in a tree squatting manner, Bill Maher told his guests on the show, he says, you know, of all the things that I've said to get in trouble, and you know there's been a lot, the thing that these people really are upset about is the 9/11 thing, and it's Building 7. So it accomplished getting Bill Maher to talk about Building 7 on live TV. And so it was great. It was really great to see. Unfortunately, for me personally, when I went to go into the show at a later time, even though I hadn't been there for that one, they pulled me out of line after I'd been waiting to go in. I was sitting with a couple other guys from the group that also hadn't been in, and, you know, two big kind of Blackwater security type guys in plain clothes from a distance said, "Excuse me, sir, can you please come over here?" And I did. I got up and walked over, and I knew what was going on because I had kind of spotted one of the guys that was questionable about him a little earlier. And I said, "Yeah." He says, he flips through a little stack of 8.5 by 11 papers, and he flips past a couple of other people, and he's got like big mug shots. He says, "Is this you?" And it was a screenshot from the earlier video, from the response to Bill Maher video.
Wow.
And I said, "Yeah, wow, my first mug shot. How about that?" "Yeah, that's me." He says, "Well, we're going to have to ask you to leave." I said, "Well, why? I didn't do anything wrong here. All I did was make a funny video, sir. We're going to have to ask you to leave." And so he, you know, told my friends they had to leave too. And I asked the security guys, because they were all kind of standing around me like a huddle. So, "Well, did any of you guys actually see the video?" And a couple of security guards started to smirk and almost laugh. And it was kind of funny because I could tell, even though they were doing their job and a couple of them were, you know, gung-ho kind of guys, a couple of them also had probably seen the video and they sort of got it.
Yeah.
And so as we were being escorted out, I had a chat with one of the guys, and he sort of saw what I was getting at, you know, what the Truth Movement was all about, and he was reluctant to comment, but it was interesting to see that he sort of did get it. And it was interesting. The Bill Maher thing was an interesting deal because it kind of, it really helped illuminate the media control and the, you know, even though the guy's supposedly a progressive intellectual with a great sense of humor, and I agree about the sense of humor part, they've got him on such a short leash that he just can only go so far, and then they yank the leash back. And it really became obvious, and we were really happy about that.
Yeah, I think it certainly was an effective way of getting the truth out, as I say. And live TV does present that opportunity, like with the Geraldo live program in New York on September 11th last year, where Alex Jones and others managed to get 9/11 was an inside job out over Fox News, which was great. But of course, it always does lend itself to that possibility that there will be a backlash against the unruly activity of the demonstrators or that type of thing. Do you see this as a possible way of We Are Change groups in the future of continuing to get the message out?
Yeah, I think we're constantly trying to find new ways that have a good tone, you know, that aren't confrontational in a negative way, where we're not being aggressive. Because at our heart, the whole movement really is about being the change we want to see in the world, and that's, you know, the anger and the hostility isn't part of that. So we're searching constantly, all of us, I think, to find new and creative ways to combat the lies and deception without having it be combat, without buying into the war mentality. It's like, you know, if you're trying to get rid of darkness, you can't fight the darkness. You just shine the light, and the darkness dissipates on its own.
Certainly true. And on that note, I've noticed that recently We Are Change LA has been heavily involved with freeway blogging. Can you tell us a little bit about that action?
That's been really fun. Now, as a group, we decided that would be a great thing to do, to reach thousands of people with banners, with big banners. So the people in our group have been great. Our meetup group and our core steering committee members have gotten together, and we came up with like 7 or 8 different sets of script, of text, that, you know, we have a girl who's a graphic designer, Cheryl. She's amazing. And she was able to format this stuff, and we put it on 5 by 21 foot banners, big blue, great-looking banners with white text. and we've been taking them out all over the place, and we just did a big action yesterday. There's a three-part YouTube video going up, another confrontation or, exchange with CHP and whatnot over First Amendment rights on freeway overpasses. So we're struggling with that one because they're searching for any way to keep us from getting the message out. And even though a lot of the police are polite, they're nice guys, we get the feeling that they're getting orders or coming down from up above to, to not let this go on. And so we're having trouble. Bruno and I and Katie and several others were out yesterday on the 10 freeway, the Rosa Parks freeway, and we had a CHP officer come up. Actually, it turned out to be several before the day was over, and, they told us we couldn't have the signs there. It was a distraction. They told us we couldn't attach them to the fence, and then when we said, okay, we'll unattach them from the fence, he said, well, no, you can't stand here with them either. And that, of course, wasn't a valid, there was no law behind that. So Bruno, asked, we've been kind of studying on this stuff, Bruno asked the officer, well, can you give us a citation? We're not complying with you. If you say take them down or you'll be arrested, we'll take them down, but we want a citation so that we can argue this in court. And he wouldn't give us a citation because, it looks like there is no law that, you can't exercise your First Amendment right on a freeway overpass. And it also looks like the case they were trying to make that it's a distraction holds zero water because, look at all the big signs alongside the freeway, the big, bright neon 80-foot by 60-foot, Jumbotron flashing light signs to advertise, the big billboards. So they're really reaching, and there's no law to back them up. It's color of law. It's intimidation. And so we're trying to find the middle ground of being polite, insisting that they write us a citation so that we can argue it in court. But they won't do that. So they ended up telling us yesterday, well, as long as you have the banners unattached and you're not blocking the sidewalk, you have to keep the banners moving back and forth. So that was ridiculous, but we thought, okay, we've had 3 hours and, tens of thousands of cars have seen them. So we left for the mid-afternoon. We came back at 4 o'clock for rush hour. We just kept the banners moving, which actually got a lot more response. Something moving, of course, draws your eye more, and we were getting a ton of honks and waves and peace signs and thumbs up. So the whole movement, I think, is kind of adapting on the fly of how to be most effective. And, there's great stuff going on, and there's even greater stuff on the horizon. We're coming up with some new and exciting stuff all over the country, all over the world, independently and as groups.
Excellent. Yeah, it's an incredibly exciting movement to be a part of and to watch as well. Getting on to some of your other actions, I think one of the most famous has been an exchange that you've had on a couple of occasions now with the noted neocon David Frum. And I understand there are perhaps some legal proceedings undergoing about one of your recent exchanges with David Frum, so if you're not able to talk about it, I understand. But I wanted to hear a little bit about your exchange, also your first exchange with Mr. Frum, which I believe took place at a book signing. Is that true?
Yeah, it was at the LA Library, and we weren't able to get good questions to him in the question and answer period inside the library, which was filmed, and it was a C-SPAN sort of thing. So we went to the table for a book signing, and we waited till everybody had their book signed, all half a dozen people or so. And we put some questions to Mr. Frum, and I had the first question. I asked him what his thoughts were on the fact that two-thirds, roughly, of America didn't buy the official story, according to Zogby polls and Smith and Howard polls, didn't buy the official story about 9/11. Somewhere around a third believe that the government, to some degree, had a hand in it by looking the other way or helping to orchestrate or elements of the government. I forget how I phrased it, but his response was, I think you should be on medication. And I kind of laughed it off and said, well, if you would answer the question, how would you answer? He said, I think you should be on medication. So all I could really say was, well, what about NORAD stand down? How would you explain NORAD stand down? He clearly didn't want to answer the question and went on to another member of We Are Change. And it went downhill from there. He clearly was stonewalling us, and they politely asked us to leave, and we politely complied. So that was the first incident to kind of set the tone. with the medication comments for the second.
Absolutely, and the second exchange also took place, I believe, at a book signing, or am I incorrect about that assumption?
No, it started out at the question and answer period. A C-SPAN filmed event for the UCLA Festival of Books, and then when they stopped the question and answer period right before I was able to ask my question, Katie and I waited for him at the stage and chatted with him for a minute, and at which point Katie asked him if, well, it was an interesting exchange, and he asked us if we were taking our medication, basically, and then he stormed off, and I went looking for him, and I found him, you're right, at a book signing about a half an hour later.
So he did seem to recognize you when you talked to him that first time.
Yeah, he said, oh yeah, I remember you.
I see, and then you went and found him at the book signing table afterwards, and I would suggest my viewers check out the video of that incident. There's been some news articles written about that, as I'm sure you're aware. Basically, what can you tell us about what was happening when Mr. Frum approached you, and what, in your own words, what were you attempting to do?
Ask a question. It's most of a simple, A or B question. I found in general, when you know somebody's not going to answer your question or is going to belittle you or berate you instead of answering the question, if you get a good question out, it really doesn't matter it's not a complete loss if they don't answer the question. Because by not addressing the question, you've shown the question. The question has gotten out and you've shown their unwillingness to answer it. So that's what I did. I got him kind of put a tough question to him, and he got offended.
That's very true. And what was your question?
Well, it didn't come out the way it was written because he really didn't give me time. But it was an A or B question. A, do you think this 9/11 investigation, the hoax that it is going to continue the way it is? Or, the question was going to be, do you see it falling apart and there being, liability, potential liability for those who have aided in the cover-up or aided in orchestrating, aiding in the implementation of the event? And he got offended and got up. I was 10 feet away filming him, from the other side of the table. And
the results, I think, are quite clear from the video. Again, I encourage my listeners to check out the video, but he quite clearly strikes you on multiple occasions while you're holding the camera attempting to ask the question. I think you're right, and you
be careful about what I say. So, it was really shocking to see a reaction like that from someone who, holds himself up as an intellectual and somebody who, makes a living being intelligent or thinking that they're intelligent and well-spoken, to not be able to address a simple question that's not an inside-the-box, dominant paradigm, let's all play along, the emperor wears no clothes question. I was stunned and amazed.
Absolutely true. And I think the footage speaks for itself. I think you touched on a point that was important earlier when you were talking about these types of questions that people are not likely to give a straightforward answer to and the best way to pose them. And I think that's a question that's important for the We Are Change movement as a whole right now. As you know, there have been a number of incidents recently with Gary Tallis in New York, with We Are Change Ohio outside of the Oliver North talk at the NRA conference in Louisville. There was also an incident with Pronzias de Rosa in Dublin, where in all cases where We Are Change members have been physically either detained or even assaulted. And certainly there seems to be a type of backlash going on against the We Are Change phenomenon at the moment. I'm wondering what you would say, what do you think is the best way for We Are Change to proceed, given this type of changing attack pattern against We Are Change from the mainstream media and even from politicians?
Well, I think it applies to the entire good-hearted population of the world, outside of We Are Change as well. I think because of what they've come up with H.R. 1955 and S. 1959, they're really making an orchestrated effort to demonize the truth movement and the, you know, the accountability, the honesty and accountability movement in the world, and portray people that are looking for the truth and accountability in opposition to potential tyranny and lies that we're seeing. They're trying to portray such people as dangerous and extremist, when actually that's the opposite. But it's a good example of what they've done with everything. It's a newspeak thing where, if you form a piece of legislation that destroys the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and then call it the Patriot Act, or you call it the opposite of what it is. So, you know, they are trying to make the truth movement into what Michelle Malkin called a virus, a truth virus, when in fact they're the virus of malignant tumor on humanity, and we're attempting to, in a peaceful, good-hearted way, as Gandhi would. This is what We Are Change was founded on. Luke gravitated to the ideas of Gandhi that we should be the change we want to see in the world, and that's, about peace and love and kindness and unselfishness. It's not about belligerence and violence, and it's exactly the opposite of that, and that's probably why they're so scared, and they're trying to preemptively color us as dangerous when nothing could be further from the truth. The only thing the truth is dangerous to is a lie, right? I mean, it's ludicrous. So I think what we're learning, and I think what we're starting to see around the world, is that if you go into a situation with as much preemptive setup as you can, setting a tone of outreach to the community, talking to the police in the area, which is what we're starting to do now. We've got outreach programs going on. If you lead in with a good-hearted, good-natured tone, let the police on site, let the bodyguards, whoever you're talking to, know that you're just nice folks trying to help your country and your community, it's not as easy for them to set you up and spin things backwards. It's also important to have video documentation and have audio documentation, and because that's where Gary Callis, fell into a really dangerous area. There wasn't good coverage, with video. It didn't show that he was the one that was attacked and enabled them to spin it, which is why most of the movement now is seeing the importance of, having a camera person, then having a camera person filming the camera person, so you don't have incidents like you have all over the world that they're spinning. The incident we saw with the Tibetan monks at the UN building in New York was horrifying.
Absolutely true, and it does speak to the importance of getting that video coverage of all of these types of actions. Stuart Howe, can you tell us in your own words about what you think the significance of the We Are Change phenomenon is, and where do you think the movement will go from here?
Well, to me, what really brought me on board this type of thing, it was We Are Change LA, was seeing videos of guys like Luke and other, peaceful activists standing up, standing on the side of the truth and what's right in a good-natured way, and speaking truth to power, speaking real truthful power to unfounded, unwarranted power. And that, to me, watching Cynthia McKinney go at Rumsfeld in Congress about the child kidnapping and the continued contracts with Halliburton and the other companies, and where was the missing $2.1 trillion, and seeing Luke with Zbigniew Brzezinski asking, really, really important questions, that got my juices flowing, and I think that has an effect. I mean, that spreads out. It enters the greater consciousness of the planet, and people are starting to say, hey, things don't add up to me either. Here are these people that are speaking out. They don't look crazy to me. They look concerned, and what they're saying adds up. And people, they start to realize, okay, even though we're not politicians and we're not highly placed public figures, the analogy would be, if you've got one guy standing in front of you who's a used car salesman, You've got another guy standing in front of you who's a Yale, let's say, graduate politician. The used car salesman is telling you 2 plus 2 equals 4, and the politician is telling you 2 plus 2 equals 5. The guy making the sense is probably the one you're going to start listening to, and that's kind of where we stand. And we're trying not to look like the used car salesman. We're trying to be just the citizens that we are. We come from all walks of life, and we're speaking what we believe to be the best representation of the truth that we can. And that strikes a chord in people, as it struck a chord in me when I heard, you know, Luke and Cynthia McKinney and other people, you know, speaking truth to power, being willing to address the 800-pound gorilla in the room, being able to stand up and say, hey, you know what, the emperor wears no clothes, and the stakes are really high right now. You know, this is where Germany was in the early 30s, and, you know, we really need to kind of honor the truth. We really need to honor accountability and honor all those marvelous things that our country was founded on and with, to a large extent, and take our country back and turn, you know, make a U-turn from where things are headed. Because even though there's, you know, they've got the military to a certain extent, they've got the infrastructure to a large extent, there's, you know, we've got them outnumbered, millions to one, and there's power in that on a lot of levels, and we're trying to rally that in a good-natured way and, you know, take back the republic from the empire. It's a big task, but it really feels great, and I think a lot of people are coming around, coming on board, and We Are Change is a big part of that, and I'm proud to be associated with it. But there are, you know, there's an awakening and a call to, you know, action, a call to peaceful, lawful action on a lot of levels in a lot of places, and we're just playing our part.
Well, it certainly is an exciting and empowering movement. Stuart Howe, where do you recommend people go for news and information free of the corporate control?
Oh, wow. That's something. And I probably have to go to my list of bookmarks. But, you know, in this country, in the U.S. and around the world, Truth Action has chapters everywhere. We Are Change has chapters everywhere. The websites, Alex Jones' websites are incredible. I mean, he's an amazing guy. He's really good at vetting his information. He's really good at pulling together news and, you know, double and triple checking and putting a lot of stuff out. So any of the Alex Jones sites, Infowars.com, Jones Report, TruthNews.us, all of his sites, and then you've got We Are Change, you've got your site, there's a ton of them, Truther.org. You know, this is kind of turning into a big web ring. A lot of sites have links to other sites. One of the ones for new people or people that, you know, really are a bit skeptical, a great one is PatriotsQuestion911Truth.org. And there you'll see a list of military personnel, both active and former intelligence community people, you know, like Ray McGovern, that have years and years of service in the intelligence community. There's a separate page with architects and engineers, a page with police and firefighters and their testimony that was, you know, left out conveniently of the commission report. There's architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, AE 9/11 Truth, more on the technical and scientific side of things. There's just a million websites, but I would ask people to exercise a bit of caution, because there's also a lot of infiltration. There's a lot of COINTELPRO type of things going on to discredit the movement. So there are sites that have wacky stuff. But, you know, if you just look past the yellow journalism and the spin and the ridiculous nature of things like the Popular Mechanics piece, you know, all of which is, it doesn't stand on any facts. They're quoting contrived reports that were sponsored by the government through NIST, and, you know, you have to look past the information and look to the sources and see what corroborates what, and a clear picture emerges. It's amazing.
It certainly is. Stuart Howe, how can people get in touch with We Are Change LA specifically?
Well, we're having trouble with our website right now. We had sort of a little bit of internal strife, and we're not able to access the website we started with. But we do have our YouTube page, and that's up and running. Our meetup page, and I'll have to get the address for that. I believe it's, well, let me actually get a business card out while we're chatting. I think it's 9-11.meetup/359, but I'll confirm that for you.
Yes, I can confirm that, actually. That is 9-11.meetup.com/359.
Yeah, /359. Yeah. And we've got another website coming up soon. But the best place to go, actually, and that will link to us, is just wearechange.org, because that way they can link to whatever chapter in whatever country around the world, whatever city in the United States they'd like. And Luke's site is phenomenal. So probably wearechange.org is the best place to go. And then if you're in L.A. or you want to link to us, our YouTube channel is good and our meetup is good. If you want to get involved, you can come to our meetup meetings. And it's really exciting. There's a lot of really great stuff going on in the world right now. And it's just exciting and empowering and wonderful to be part of it.
Excellent. Stuart Howe, thank you very much for joining me today on the Corbett Report.
My pleasure, James. Thanks for inviting me on.
No problem. Thank you, and I hope to talk to you again in the future.
Sounds good. Anytime.